here. My name is Pete Brown. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. That's my Twitter ID. Any of you using Twitter? A couple of people. That's always an interesting demographic to see how many folks are using Twitter here. So if you are on the Twitters, go ahead and tweet me at that address there. And also, if you have follow-up questions from this that I'm not able to address while I'm in here, my email address is pete.brown@microsoft.com, so real simple. So we're going to cover, first of all, why you're going to target the Windows Store. You know, it seems like a really basic question, but a lot of folks are like, well, why would I even bother? Like, I'm building apps for Windows 7, I'm building apps for Windows XP. How many of you are running XP right now? Oh, you guys are killing me. That's three people over here. All right, we're going to have words after the end of this, I think. You know, you might want to know why you would even bother with this Windows 8 stuff and kind of what the opportunity is, and I'm going to cover a bit of that. We'll cover what to do before you submit your app. So there's certain steps that you want to do as soon as possible, as soon as you have an app idea. Cover the submission and certification process. Some of those problems, especially some of the key problems that folks run into during that process. And then how to maximize your opportunity for promotion. I'm going to assume that for most folks here, if you build a Windows Store app, you want people to download it, right? You might want to make a couple bucks in the process. Anybody here not like making money? Even the XP guys? No? Okay, good. So everybody here at least is unified in the fact that they might like to make a couple bucks in this process. So why would we even bother? Why would we even bother targeting it at this point? So I have an interesting little thing here. I'll cover this in a second. I'll switch over here in just 1 second as soon as I have this up. Here we go. So this is like late-breaking information that I didn't have when I put the deck together. But Windows 8, in numbers, 100 million licenses of Windows 8 sold. Pretty decent audience, huh? 100 million customers? I think that's a reasonable size. Imagine if you priced your app at $1.99 and like 5% of those people downloaded your app and paid for it. You can clean up pretty well, right? Yeah? Okay. 2,400 devices have been certified, including a number of those in touch. So 2,400 different devices have been certified for Windows 8. You think about that for a second. Think about the Windows ecosystem that's involved in that. 2,400 different devices that can run Windows 8. I'd like to say we're pretty unique that way in that we have basically something for everybody. If you want a small device that can use touch, we have that. If you want one of our first-party devices like Surfaces that I saw just about everybody in here picked up, we have those. Any of you use the big touch screens? Any of you see the performance at Build last fall? There was a performance with Jordan Rudess. Anybody know who that is? The XP guys? Not even the XP guys know who Jordan Rudess. Okay. So there was a performance as part of that. I encourage you to go to channel9.msdn.com and take a look at the Build 2012 videos. And you'll see Jordan. He's there as a keyboard player and stuff. Halfway through his talk, he does a demo of his apps, which were originally on the iPad, but are now also available for Windows. We'll have those in the Windows Store very soon. He's running them on a 27-inch Lenovo touchscreen. And this is a guy, he's a famous piano player. He's a prog rock player and other stuff. He went to Juilliard at like age 10 or something along those lines. So he's used to having a large device, a large piano, a large surface to play on. And with the iPad, he was very cramped. You know, he just had, you know, just this tiny little device that he could play with. And even on the Surface, again, tiny little device, although we're a little wider there, that he could play with. But then when he got out to a 27-inch screen, that was heaven for this guy. He's like, wow, you know, I have all this ability to be more expressive and I can have more notes on the screen and I can really play with that. And as developers, you can write the same code that runs on the tiny little device all the way up to these big screens or even the 80-inch screens like what Steve Ballmer used at Last Build as well. He had the giant weatherman-type screen behind him, except it was fully multi-touch. I think that's really kind of the power of Windows 8 and the power of our platform to be able to support all these different devices. Now, I know there's some question about, well, there's a whole bunch of apps in the store, right? So we have, I don't have the number there, but we have quite a few apps in the store. But how many of those are actually useful to people? Well, if you look, 90% of the apps in the app catalog are downloaded every month, right? So that's actually pretty good. So 90% of the apps in there get downloaded at least one time a month. And so that means that they are useful to somebody. Then, of course, we've got 250 million SkyDrive users. SkyDrive is part of the platform. Outlook.com, and, of course, all the other stuff that we're doing with Azure, as well as all of our online properties. So I think those are pretty good numbers, especially considering that the Windows Store, October is when we opened the Windows Store. End of October is when Windows 8 was officially released and when we opened the store. So that makes it, like, what, 7-8 months old? Those are pretty good numbers for 7 or 8 months. Let's get back over here. Good. So I've already discussed that there are lots of Windows PCs out there. And there's potential for lots more, especially as we get these really sexy devices. I mean, if you haven't looked at some of the new touch devices that are out there, they're just really attractive. It's exciting for me because PC manufacturers are starting to move away from the big, ugly, black or gray box and starting to make some devices that, you know, my wife is happy to use. She's like, you know that she has an Acer S7. She really loves how that looks, and she thinks it's attractive. It's important for her that it not look like this big, ugly, clunky brick, right? She wanted something that looks pretty decent. And so we are getting more and more devices that are attractive, that are unique, that perform really well, that don't weigh 50 pounds, right, in your backpack, and that are highly usable and also touch-enabled. But that's, all right, so that's why you might want to build for Windows. The Windows Store itself also adds a lot of infrastructure which is useful to folks. Like we have in-app purchases, as well as just the ability to have the app purchased to begin with. Those are all things that are handled through the Windows Store. But where we're, I think, a little bit better than some of the other platforms is you don't have to use our stuff if you don't want to. If you want to do in-app purchases, but you don't want to use our revenue sharing model, which is a 70-30 model, which is pretty standard in the industry, if you don't want to do that, that's fine. You can go and use PayPal, right? And PayPal will take their cut, whatever their percentage is. Or if you're in another country, you can use some of the mobile-based ones where the mobile operators will charge the expense directly to your phone. So we're open in that we support, you know, pretty much any revenue provider out there who wants to make their code and their platform available for Windows 8. And there are more and more third parties popping up that provide their own infrastructure, some of which are providing even more functions than, our infrastructure provides by default. They're providing subscription-based code in there. They're providing, a lot of things with, like, consumables and things like that. We also handle app update. You put your app out in the store, and we handle making sure that the user gets it. And we handle those diffgrams and stuff to make sure that the user doesn't have to download a 1 gig package every time, that they only download the stuff that changed. You don't have to think about that. You just put your app up in the store, and we handle that. So again, there's a lot of benefits to having that in there. And then finally, it's a store. How many of you have apps that you're written sitting in Best Buy or any other store out there? Anybody? Not me, right? The Windows Store is a store. If you want some place where you can list your app and sell your app that everybody is going to see it, this is the place to do that. The Windows Store is installed. That app is installed on every single Windows 8 PC. And, of course, it supports impulse buying, right? You know, the candy at the checkout in the store, and everybody's like, oh, last minute, and your kids nag you about that and all that kind of stuff. Well, impulse buys are a great way to make money, and stores know that. Well, at $1.99... for an app, or $1.49 for an app, that's actually cheaper than a pack of gum in many cases. And people are doing impulse buys on all these different games, and even like the free ones that they can do in-app purchases later. And they're making these decisions to buy that. And they're doing it very quickly. Whereas if you go into a store usually and you're looking for a particular piece of software, you'll sit there and you'll look at it and you'll read the box and you'll like agonize a bit over it. And it's like, oh, it's $40 and I'm not sure if I'm going to get it. But these purchases are just made very quickly and by all sorts of users of all different ages. I mentioned a couple of different opportunities for revenue here, such as like in-app purchases. But of course, you know, people can buy your app. You know, starting at like $1.49, people can buy your app. You can even price it up to, I believe, $1,000. Angry Birds for $1,000 is probably not going to sell, right? So you might want to price it a little bit cheaper than that. But we do support those prices. We have in-app purchases, which is once you have the app on your machine, you can then download additional content. So some games let you download additional chapters. I do a lot with the music industry. They let you download additional, the music performance industry, excuse me. Their apps a lot of times will let you download additional grooves and different synthesizer patches and stuff like that. Those are all additional ways that you as an app developer can make money. Also advertising. How many people like advertising? I hate advertising. That's why I have two different ads on every single page on my website. You know why? Because that's how I buy toys. My website, the ads on my website make me enough money that I can buy toys from time to time. The ads in your apps are another great way to make money. And if you do it tastefully and you incorporate it in with the content, it's not just a banner ad slapped on the top of the screen that everybody has managed to learn to tune out, right? It's actually part of your app and people are seeing that and you're getting paid by those impressions. Then finally, how many of you work at a company that's considering building a Windows 8 app? Right? For many of you, the way that you're going to make money is not by ads in the app or by in-app purchases or anything like that, but it's by driving awareness of your brand and driving those people into your brick-and-mortar properties or to your website or to other places. Apps are a great way to do that, where it can provide that brand awareness and get people into your store or into these other places. So this is a card game. Any of you play card games? You know, the after-lunch sessions, I always try to make sure you get a little cardio in, so that's why I keep getting you to raise your hands and stuff here. So only one person here plays card games? Just one guy. No, two. All right, the XP guys, you guys are playing like the original Win31 Solitaire on your machine back there, I think, right? So I always like to have one person in the back to pick on, and please don't kill me when I leave the room later on. So this is a game called Card Games Chess, right? Pretty easy. It has in-app purchases for different games. You see there's quite a few different games in here, right? How many of you think the logic for a card game would be hard for you to develop? Nobody. I mean, card game logic, not too hard. Graphics for card games, not too hard, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that you can use. So this person made $30,000 on this app. That's not too bad, right? Yes? No? Is that good? Per month. This guy's making 30 grand a month on his app, on a card game. 30 grand on a card game. How many of you people here think a card game is too hard to create now? Would you do it for 30 grand a month? Yeah, 30 grand a month. Not a whole lot I wouldn't do for 30 grand a month, right? But we won't go there. 30 grand a month. And he's got a blog post up describing this, and he's making it through in-app purchases and ad revenue. Now, he got in early, which certainly helps. But people are still able to make this kind of money, especially in categories that aren't saturated, right? If you're one of the first apps in a particular category, the opportunity for you is absolutely amazing. So I write books. I've written 3 books. Any of you buy my book? You people are all that's wrong with development, I think is what it is. So I've written 2 Silverlight books and a Windows 8 book. The Windows 8 book is in the store now. It came out 2 days ago, so please go buy it. It's the other thing that supports all my toys. Or feeds my children, if that makes you feel better. I don't make $30,000 a month writing my book. When my wife saw this slide, and she saw that I spent the last year all night, every single night, writing my book, she's like, why aren't you building apps? You need to be building apps, not writing stuff in a book. So I'm going to build a few apps here and try to get them out. So that's it for why, and I hope I've convinced everybody here that there was opportunity for building apps in Windows 8. There's certainly opportunity for fame and love and glory and making a couple of bucks in the process. So I'm going to talk about now about the different things you need to do before you submit the app, and we'll cover each of these in detail here. So the first thing is you need to set up the right account. This is a new process where if you've never built an app for Windows Phone or Windows 8, you might not be used to this. But every developer needs to have a developer account. If you're just noodling around, it's free. Don't worry about that. It's you don't have to go into the store and create your own developer account there. But if you want to publish an app into the store, you need to go in and get one of the publisher accounts. There are 2 different types of accounts. There's an individual account and there's a business account. Which one you pick is going to be the most important first decision that you make. So as an individual, you'll probably gravitate towards these individual accounts, but understand that it's the business accounts that have additional access to things like the documents library and can also upload desktop apps to be listed in the store as well. There's more verification that goes through in that process. If you want a business account, you need to go through additional levels of verification. It takes a bit longer, et cetera, but this is, again, one of the first things that you want to do. Now, don't pick a throwaway name, right? I've had some email addresses where I picked domain names that I'm embarrassed every single time that I tell the person the email address because the domain name is quite embarrassing, right? But the problem is once you start using it, you're sort of stuck with it. And you realize if I go to change that domain name, then, I'm going to have to deal with, like, telling everybody my email address change and everything like that. Same thing with the store. Don't pick a throwaway name for your account. pick a good name. Don't violate copyrights or other people's trademarks, because we're not policing that, but the other people will come and report you to the store, in which case we'll investigate it, but we're not the ones reporting that. So if you register yourself as Facebook, pretty good chance that Facebook is going to come in and say, that's not us, and have us go and fix that form. Changing the account that you have from one account to another effectively orphans your app. That's why you want to do this up front. You want to make sure you have that good account name and information there. If you go in and start off under account A, and you get a whole bunch of users, and then you're like, wow, I named it Facebook, they sued me, I need to go and pick another name and create another account, or I started as an individual and I need to make this a business account, the app effectively gets orphaned because there's no upgrade path that'll bring you to another account. Right, you end up having to spin up a second app and then tell people, well, please go download the other app. And then if it was a for-purchase app, you have to deal with how they're going to do all that. So that just gets to be a bit of a mess. You don't want to do that. So again, pick the right account up front. So pick a good app name. App names, again, are kind of like domain names here. There can be only one. Any Highlander fans? Yeah, okay. There can be only one of any given app in the store. So pick the right app name. Again, don't violate anybody's copyright or trademark or anything like that in the app name. And reserve it. As soon as you know that you are going to build an app or think that you're going to build an app under this name, go and reserve it in the store. You can reserve it for up to a year. And if you don't do anything with it at the end of the year, then we throw it back into the pool, right? But you can always go back in and reserve it again. Okay? Yes? So the question is, do you need to have a developer account established to reserve a name? And the answer is yes. So in order to go in and do any of the stuff in the Windows Store itself, you do need to have a developer account at that point. And then the store app name must be consistent with the one that's in Visual Studio, and we have some things that'll help you synchronize the two. Okay. When you're thinking of the name of the app, think about how it's going to display on the tile. So you see there down at the bottom, I have an app that says, this app has a wonderfully long name, something or other. You want an app name that's shorter than that, because it'll get cut off on the tile. So you want something that's going to fit on there, that's going to be relatively short, unique, and descriptive. So as you can imagine, the name is pretty important to establish up front. So let me show you really quickly here how to go into the store and register your name. So this is dev.windows.com. Like if I just went in and went to http://dev.windows.com, it brings me to this Windows Dev Center. And this Windows Dev Center is also the location where you're going to find all the information that you need for how to build apps. This is where you're going to find out, you know, what different languages you can use, what the APIs look like. Everything that we have for building Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 apps starts here. Okay? Now, one of the other things that's here is your dashboard. So if I go up here to the dashboard, this is a list of apps that I'm working on. You can see they're there. I haven't finished them yet. There's a couple that haven't been started, and I better hurry up and get on that. But these are all the apps that I have there. So if I want to create a new app, I'm going to go over and say submit an app. I'm going to pick the app name. See, there's several different steps there. And this is doing presentations like this is the only time that I'm glad that the password box is masked, because you know any other time it's just annoying to me. All right, so I'm going to create an app, and I'm going to call it TechEd 2013 and my initials. Okay, so not super exciting. I'm going to reserve the name, and it's going to check to make sure that that's a unique name. It says it's reserved. I'm going to save it. Some warnings about making sure that you actually have the rights to use that name. That's a very important thing there. All right. So now this app is listed up here. So if I go back to my dashboard, you'll see it is now one of the apps that I have under my name in the store. You can reserve up to 100. I believe it's up to 100 names in the store without publishing. Right. So you have to start, once you get up to like 100 names, you need to start publishing. And that's to prevent people from just squatting on all sorts of names and doing the obnoxious things that people do with domain names as well. Okay? So I'm going to leave that up because we're going to do a lot more with that here shortly. Yes? Yep. You know, I haven't checked. I think it's the same. but it's a lot more verification. Don't quote me on the price, though, because I don't deal with that. But there's a lot more, there's like geotrust verification and other stuff that's involved in it.
So if you are planning on starting a business, yep, they actually have already, you know, all that paperwork done before you do that? Or
you need to have all that paperwork done before you do this, which is a really, really good point. So, you know, the question is, if you're going to register a business account in the store, you know, do you need to have all of that paperwork and everything submitted and have your account done before you can go and reserve an app name? And the answer is yes, you do need to. And because that can take a little bit of time, especially if you're out of country or have any bizarre things where you have different presences in different places and the verification gets more complex, then that can take a fair bit of time to do that. It's usually just a matter of, you know, a few weeks, whereas something like an individual account can usually be approved almost immediately, right? Okay? So the next thing you need to do is create a high-quality and useful app. I've seen some apps out there that are not useful and not high quality, and people put them up there in the store and put a price of $1.99 on it, and they just sit back to like, come to me money, right? And that's just not going to happen. It needs to be something that folks are going to use and going to want to have access. So I'm not going to dwell on that today. Tomorrow morning, for those of you that aren't out partying all night tonight, tomorrow morning I have a talk on what it means to create quality apps and what the traits are of those apps. Submission and certification may be more complex if your app is crap, right? You know, we're not actively policing the quality of apps because that's not something the store can or should do because it's so subjective. But if you have issues like the app's not integrating with parts of the OS correctly and it's not using navigation correctly and stuff, it may actually fail different steps in the certification. But again, I wanted to point out, we don't police quality, right? We do for promotion and for highlighting of apps. You know, we definitely police quality there, but the apps in the store just need to work. And it's up to you all to make sure that if you want your app to be highlighted and actually be downloaded by people, you need to make sure it's a high-quality app. Languages. Any of you create multi-region or multilingual applications? All right, it's a few people. We have very specific sets of languages that are allowed in the store. So we have, first of all, there's the certifiable language, which is the language that must be used in your UI. So you have to pick one of the list of certifiable languages for your user interface. Now, all the interface elements and all the content needs to at least be supported there. And so having worked with a lot of people in India, this can be a little bit of an issue for them, where they need to pick one of the main languages for the majority of the content, and then the rest of the stuff that shows on needs to be something that they can flip a bit or flip a switch in the app at runtime and let the user pick one of the secondary languages that maybe we don't support. Like, we'll have Hindi in there, but we may not have one of the other regional dialects. I think India has like a couple hundred languages or something crazy like that. Then we have additional set of allowed languages that are in there, and that's where we allow all those other languages. But again, you need to support at least one of the certifiable languages. All right? And we're always adding to this list, so if you don't see a particular language in there that you really want right away, then you know we are modifying this over time as languages become more and more popular. Now, there's also a tool called WAC, which I'll show you in a second. And this is the certification kit tool, so it's a Windows App certification kit tool. This is a product that is installed on your machine as part of your Visual Studio 2012 install. It's free. It's just our client-side verification tool. This is going to run through your app and do a lot of really basic checks to make sure that your app meets the basic certification criteria. Running it and passing it is not a guarantee that your app will pass the full certification process in the store, but it's a pretty good indicator of that. Right? And I'll show you what that looks like here shortly as well. WAC runs against the installed version of the app on your machine. So if you're running, if you're supporting both x86 and x64 as separate builds for your app, you need to uninstall one and then run WAC against the second one as well. And the reason is some apps have failed because their x64 version that was built had a reference to a 64-bit C++ DLL, and that worked fine, right? But then the x86 version also incorrectly had a reference to the 64-bit DLL instead of the 32-bit DLL. And so that app wasn't working correctly. But the developer didn't realize it because their 64-bit version they'd been testing all along worked just fine. And so they couldn't figure out why it was failing at that point. And that was the case in there. So if you're using like Bing Maps or using some third-party controls or stuff that are built in C++, you have to build the packages separately for each architecture, and that's where you need to make sure you're running it for each one. Before submitting, also test your ARM version. You all have Surfaces now, or just about all of you have Surfaces in here from this, so make sure you also test on that Surface. And understand there's a version of WAC that you can freely download and run on the Surface as well, so make sure you test the ARM build, especially because it's going to do some basic performance testing. And speaking of testing, these apps are small, but that doesn't mean your testing burden is any less than what you had for larger desktop apps. So I want to make sure that you test, right? I love the little sticker on the right, works on my machine. That's what we as developers always love, right? Not so good for store apps. You know why? Because people rate your apps. People rate apps in the store. And I've seen the public. I've been on the internet. People are brutal on ratings. I wasted my $1.49. You know, it takes, when somebody gives you a 1-star because your app crashed, and they wasted their $1.49, it's like a whole different world from what we've dealt with before. So you want to make sure that app is solid when it goes out there. 1-star reviews are really hard to shake. Okay? So like, any of you ever post videos to YouTube? And people are like, I want my 10 minutes back. It's like, all right, thanks. So apps, the apps that are small and need as much testing as large apps. And again, many apps fail store certification because they crash on test machines that are used in the store certification process. So you need to test what happens, just normal use in your app. You need to suspend your app, you know, swipe over and go to a different app, and then resume your app and make sure that it comes up correctly and doesn't crash on suspend, resume. You need to make sure that it shuts down correctly when you go to shut down the app. And you need to make sure, first of all, that the first run experience of your app with no data on the machine, nothing, actually works. Because there's so many of us that we've been working on apps for 6 months or whatever. We have certain settings on the machine and data on the machine, and we forget that we have to put those there to begin with the first time you install and run the app. Privacy policy for the first 6 months of store adoption, the privacy policy was probably the single largest reason apps were being rejected from the store. If your app uses the internet at all, doesn't matter what you do, if you declare the internet capability for your app, you must include a privacy policy. Because we're going to assume that if you're using the internet, you could be sending information, you know, out to other servers and catching that. And the privacy policy deals with what you do with that data. And remember, something as simple as the IP address of the user is data about that user. So we're serious about making sure that you have a privacy policy. Now, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not giving you official guidance on how to write a privacy policy here. I'm not a lawyer, okay? I'm not a lawyer. All right. Just want to make sure I'm covered on that. That said, your privacy policy doesn't need to be a bunch of legalese. It just needs to say, here's what I capture, and here's what I'm doing with it. Right? How many of you have credit cards? Don't you love the privacy policies you get from them? They email you quarterly and it says, at so-and-so bank, we care deeply about your privacy. And then 4 pages of how they'll violate it, right? So this is not that. This is much simpler. This is just a couple of paragraphs that say, here's what we're going to do with the information that we capture. Don't use this to point to your company's blanket privacy policy. The privacy policy must deal specifically with the app. So it could be a section of your company's privacy policy if and only if the first, small section of that points people to exactly where the privacy policy for the app is located in that otherwise pile of text. And by pointing them, I mean you click on it and it brings you right there, right? So that privacy policy needs to be specific to the app, not kind of a blanket one for your company. And many, many apps fail due to these missing privacy policies. As a side note, when you do file new project in Visual Studio, the internet capability is declared by default. Right? If you don't use it, turn it off, and you also won't have to deal with the privacy policy stuff. Oop, massive fade. Okay. That was quite attractive. All right, so let me talk a bit about the WAC and the submission process here. So let me go back over here. This is the WAC tool. Or it will be in a second. There we go. So this is the tool that you're going to use to check your app, to do that pre-checking. And I'm going to click here on just validate a Windows Store app. Let's see if we can click that. There we go. It's going to take a second. And what this will do at that point is go through and look at every single app that is installed on your machine. Now remember, it's testing what's installed. It's not testing what's in Visual Studio. It's testing what's installed on your machine, because it's going to run it and force it to close and do a bunch of interesting things like that. Now, that takes about 15 minutes, depending upon the complexity of your app. Sometimes it's really, really quick. So once this comes up, I'm not going to show you. I'm going to pull a kind of a Betty Crocker moment here and show you the pre-baked version in a second. But I do want it to come up so you can see that list of apps. This same tool is also what you can use to validate a desktop app. So again, if you are a business account, you can list desktop apps in the store if and only if they pass the certification criteria. Any WPF devs in here? Guys doing WPF work? So if you have a business account and a killer desktop app, you can list it in the store, but we don't handle any of the monetization or any of that kind of stuff. It's essentially a link out to where people can purchase it on their site, but it does provide visibility to you to be able to see that. All right, I will come back to WAC here in a second. Let me show you the results from that. When you pass or fail WAC, you'll get an XML file with these results. And so here's an app that failed. You see it checks to see whether the app crashed and hanged, whether the manifest was had all the correct things declared, whether or not it's only using supported APIs, not additional APIs. There was an example way back of how to use pinvoke inside a Windows Store app to be able to access GDI. We're not going to let you do that. We're going to verify it at this stage to make sure you're not doing that. But let's see. So here's an example of something that failed. And you see here, the reason it failed is because I compiled in debug mode. Your apps that go to the store must be compiled in release mode, not debug mode. Okay, so that's another reason why apps can sometimes fail. Because the Windows Store, when you submit it, essentially the first thing they do is they run their version of WAC on it, which does all these same checks and tells them whether it passed or failed. All right. We're also checking things like resources. If you have the default Windows Store icon, so early on in the process of getting apps out into the Windows Store, many of them had that little X as the icon. And so in a subsequent version of WAC, we added a check in there to make sure you're not just using the default X icon, that you actually went in and produced something useful. So we check that as part of WAC here. It's going to check file encoding, Direct3D feature level support, because you can declare certain feature levels in there. And then finally, going to check a lot of the Windows runtime metadata validation. Now, as .NET developers, most of you are .NET developers, I assume, most of the things that could fail are automatically handled for you by .NET. Like a lot of the things about the metadata validation and all that stuff, handled for you automatically by .NET and by Visual Studio. But some additional things here are what might snag you. So run this before you submit, but also run this as a checkpoint throughout developing, through the whole development process. Okay, and let's see if WAC has come up with the list. Yes. So here we have, it's come up with the list of elements on the screen. So we have that. Have myself in zoomed in mode here. So it's just going to list all these different apps on here. And what you can do is you can check it off and then run it at that point and run WAC on that. And then walk away from your machine while it does it, because it's going to open and close the app. It's going to check performance. That is not a good time to go and run like a CPU burn program or something on your PC at that point in time, because it really wants to check the performance and make sure everything's cool. Okay, so let's get back out. All right, and close this. Now you can get to WAC either by, if I go start here and I type cert, it's going to come up. The other thing that you can do is go in Visual Studio and under the store menu, so here's an HTML app. So if you go under Project, Store, and when you go to create the app packages, it'll ask you at that point in time if you want to run WAC on it a final time. So again, that's just another additional checkpoint. So speaking of creating the app packages, let's do that. So this is a sample app. Why don't I actually show you what it does so you can see? Let me cancel this for a second. This is an interesting app that I had built by a third party. It's just a demo of what you can do in Windows Store apps without having to do, just two rows of boxes on the screen. Wanted something that was a little more interesting visually. So this is a sports app. right? And this is not a touch device, what I'm on right here, so I'm just using the mouse to move through. But it has on here, you know, different, you know, the different teams that you might be interested in. So here's the Haast Wizards. You see it's got colors for branding for each of the different teams. We also have, let's see, there's a stag. You see that's red. And also if I scroll over on the right, you'll see other stuff here. There's the main story. You see some really interesting things, like when I scroll to the right, it actually fades the background so that when you're in the middle, it highlights the background picture that's appropriate for that story, and going to the right, it fades it. Now also notice the ad. There are ads in this app, but they're not just slapped on. They're not like just like in the middle in some obnoxious way. They bookend the content. So there's one all the way over here at the right, and then there's one all the way over here at the left, and they kind of fit in with what we're doing. Right. So this happens to be an HTML and JavaScript app, but you could certainly do that in XAML or anything else if you would like to. Right. So now I'm going to take this app and say project store. I've already reserved the app name. So the next thing I want to do is I want to associate this app with the app that's in the store. So I'm going to sign in. There we go. Pete.brown. Remember I was talking about those embarrassing domain names? That's the one. Let's see. There we go. I didn't just say my password while I was typing it, I hope. All right. So here's a list of all the names that I have in the store. And this is the app that I want to associate it with. And what this is going to do is it's going to update the local app manifest with the name information that I put on the store, as well as some ID stuff. So now when I do this, I can click Associate, make writable because it happened to be from source control, that crazy people using source control. I don't understand them at all. And then if I go back to the AppX manifest and look under packaging, let me zoom in here because that's really small. Here it's pulled the package name and the package display name and stuff down directly from the Windows Store account. So this is something that you want to do early on. It'll stay synchronized so that you can you know, make sure that this matches with what's in the Windows Store, because again, it'll fail if these things don't match up. Yes? Is this one where it pulls the certificate down from the store as well? Yes, right? So all that stuff comes down at this point. Because usually you're just under a local developer certificate. At this point, it pulls it down from the Windows Store. Now, you can do this stuff manually if you want, but that's like, you don't want to do it manually. You can, but you don't want to. And I know some of you are going to take that as a challenge to do it. So, great. All right, so now that I've associated that, I can go and say project store. Now I can create the app packages. Do you want to build packages for upload to the Windows Store? Yes. If I was just sharing this with a tester or somebody for sideloading, I would say no. So I'm going to sign in and go through that again. And if I didn't say my password last time, there we are. Here's the app. Next. Now, this particular app that I'm building here doesn't have any CPU-dependent packages. There is no C++ code in this, so I can choose neutral. If I had C++ code, like add SDK stuff, Bing map stuff, a lot of things that the music industry does there, things are all in C++ as well, I would have to check off x86, 64, and ARM. You do want to support all architectures, if at all possible. We don't highlight apps in the store unless they support all three architectures. And the reason for that is if we put an app of, say, like on a commercial on TV, and the user has a Surface that's Surface RT, and they see that app, they're like, wow, that's a really cool app. I want to find it in the store. If you don't support ARM, they're not going to see it in there, and they're going to be confused as to what's the deal here. Why isn't that app in the store? So we only highlight apps if they support all three. All right, I'm going to create these app packages. Yeah, I want to replace it. So the question was, when you support neutral, does it automatically support all three? The answer is yes. Okay. So it's created the packages. And this, you can see, this is a chance where I can start WAC if I want to here. I've already run WAC. I'm not going to do it here, although I could, again, if I wanted to. So I'm going to close this. And now if I go to where my app is, so here's Sports League. If I go to App Packages, there's the NECPU. And you see, this is the stuff you could sideload if you want, but this appx upload right here, this is the file that's going to go to the Windows Store. It's just an archive of everything that's in this other folder here. If you're sharing this with somebody else for testing locally, you send them everything that's in this folder, and they run the PowerShell script that's in here, and they accept your developer license as something that is, your certificate, excuse me, as something of authority on their machine, which is why you don't want to broadly do this, because they're accepting a certificate as an authority on their machine. It's just your, just you, right? I don't trust me with that kind of stuff. And they run the PowerShell script to do all that. Again, though, for uploading it to the store, you're just going to go through and take that appx upload. All right. So let's go back to the store app for a second here. Let me go back to the slides here. So now that we've got those created, I want to go through and do the submission itself. So we're going to pick markets and do a number of other things. So the first thing that you want to do is pick the markets for your app. So we've built the app. We know that we got it. We figured out what languages we're going to support. Now we need to pick the markets. The markets and languages aren't necessarily related. You can create an app in English and deploy it worldwide, right? However, if you want your app to do really well in specific locales, you probably want to support their local languages. But that can be a real burden for some folks, so we don't police that. Not all apps make sense in all markets. You know, there are certain markets where, you know, if you're Kmart, you know, your app might not make sense, you know, out in Africa or something like that. Maybe they don't have Kmart there, right? So you want to put your apps out just in places where it's going to make sense. And the reason is the more markets you support, the more you need to go in and check to see what your reviews are like and make sure that you're supporting it and also making sure that your app doesn't break under different locales and things like that. Most of that's pretty easy, but it is a very slight increase in the testing burden that you have. Some apps may be offensive in some markets, right? Some games might be considered quite offensive in other countries. So again, think about that when you're going in and building these apps. You want to provide a great description, and we'll get there and show you that in a second. Describe only what your app does. Don't promise additional features. Don't put on your used car salesman hat and start talking about it there. Be honest about what your app does and be complete. You know, you want something that has a meaningful description in there. And most importantly, don't mention any of your other apps. So anything that seems like it's advertising your company or advertising your other apps or advertising anything else will cause your app to not be accepted during the certification process. And this is something that a lot of apps have kicked out from. We want that description to solely talk about the app that we're looking at. We don't want you trying to upsell or do anything with other apps. And if the app supports in-app purchases for kind of major features, if you're like a free-to-play type app, we highly encourage you to describe that as part of the process. You're going to provide screenshots. Provide more than one screenshot. Make sure there are attractive screenshots showing something that your app does well. You know, don't screenshot the settings page or the splash screen or something that's mostly blank. You want to have a meaningful screenshot that somebody's going to look at and say, I want that app. It does something really cool. So here's one of the screenshots. You guys like this screenshot? Does it make you want to download this app? This is an actual app that's in the store, and if it was any of you guys, I'm sorry to pick on you. And if it's any of the folks who are watching this at home, again, sorry to pick on you, but this screenshot's terrible. I hope your app does more than this. I'm not going to buy this app based on this. That's the only screenshot that they have. Marketing images are something else that's very optional, but if you want your app to actually be highlighted in the store, you must provide these marketing images. They're the last thing. They are, you know, like four different marketing images of different resolutions. Take the time to create those. Screenshots from your app with some additional stuff around them. If you have an art department, do that certainly. But if you're just, you know, a guy or a girl who is building these apps, and you know, show a meaningful screenshot or something in there, you know, with your app name overlaid on it. You know, something that maybe will show people what your app does and what it's about. And this is an example of example of marketing images used in the store. And again, I can't reiterate this enough. If you do not provide these, we can't highlight your app because we don't have the assets that we need. And we want to highlight cool apps. Pick a revenue model. This is something you do during the submission process. Of course, you've been thinking about this through development, especially if you need to enable different functionality based on different levels of purchases. Paid app, free app with in-app purchases for stuff, And those in-app purchases could be in-app purchase to remove ads, in-app purchases to provide additional functionality, in-app purchase to upgrade from free to like a complete version. We have lots of options there that you can choose. Unlike other platforms, you don't have to submit separate free versions and paid versions. We have all the infrastructure in there that you can use to take it so that while the user is sitting there with your game and your game had, you know, one free chapter at the beginning that they really got into, that they can click that buy button to get the rest of the chapters for that game. I've also seen some innovative things where some people make games that have like hard puzzles in them, and then they sell you hints. That's awesome. That is such a great idea for games. I completely hate them for doing that, but I absolutely love that idea. Make a really hard game and then sell me hints. Wow. Ad-supported, that's another great way to build money in your app. And you don't have to choose just ad-supported or one of these other ones, but in general, if people paid for an app, they expect that it's not going to have ads in it, et cetera. So you just need to kind of keep that in mind. And of course, your app can be free, right? But I want to encourage you to consider making some money out of your app. Free is fine, but you know, you took time to build this app. You know, try to do something with it. Try to make some money out of it. Try to support your habit. There are people now who are building apps full time. They've built businesses out of just building apps. You know, maybe you want to be that guy, not stuck in the IT department in the back of the office, right? Yes. Okay, so the question was, how do the ad-supported ones work? Do you have to go door-to-door selling ads like Girl Scout cookies and ad placement in my cool app? So the answer is, we take care of that. So you use our ad SDK, or if you don't like our ads and our ad SDK, you can go use some of the other ones like Google and some of those other companies that produce those, and you can incorporate their ads into the app as well, right? You can even use one as a fallback for the other ones, so you can do a lot of cool things with that. We handle all that. Like for the Microsoft ads, we sell the ad placements, we sell the ads, we have that whole inventory built up. You use the ad SDK and you make decisions such as what size of ad, I forget if it's keywords or categories, I think it's categories, that you want ads to show up with. You know, if your app is a music creating app, you might want to do something that's more music created as opposed to like cooking ads or something like that, right? So we handle all that. Enable trial mode in your app. So most of us here are not known app developers, and we are, you know, the generic root beer of app developers. We don't have this like really big brand that we can fall back on. So if your app costs money, people are not going to download it because they don't know you. They don't know whether or not this app's going to be good, right? So they're probably not going to download it unless you provide some sort of trial version. And having a trial version of your app, again, the trial mode, I should say, it's the same app, and we have APIs to enable trial mode and handle all that licensing for you. Having that in there increases conversion of trial to paid by a really, really high extent. So one of the other things you could do is your trial version of the app could be an indefinite trial with ads in it. And they want to pay to remove the ads, they can purchase the full version through in-app purchases. Yes? Trial, is something we have to actually code in Visual Studio, or is it something supported in the market? So the question is a trial something that you have to code in Visual Studio, or is it something supported in the market? There's two approaches you can take here. If you don't want to do any coding work at all, you just check off enable trial mode and you say how long in the store submission. Right, so actually on the store page itself. And you don't have to do anything with your code. When the trial expires, the app will no longer run on the user's workstation. It'll show a little X, and if they try to run it, it says you need to buy the full version. That experience is the bare bones experience. If you want to do something more like turn off certain features or, you know, encourage them in the app to convert to the full version, you do have to write a little bit of code for that. But again, we have APIs where you basically ask, do they have a license for this? And we reply back yes or no, and if they do have a license, great. If they don't have a license, maybe you want to do something to try to convert them. So we have a lot of that infrastructure in there. So remember that app I showed you? It's $1.99 for that app with the play button on it. Now, it happens to have 9 ratings. I'm sort of suspicious of those 9 five-star ratings. But are you going to buy that? This app, for all we know, the next page after that red play button could be the most amazing game you have ever played in your whole life. Probably not, but it could be, right? without a trial mode, I'm not going to know that. And I'm not going to buy this. And again, I'm sorry for whoever created that. Make a better app. Okay. Set the age rating. This is something else most of us don't usually think about when we're building apps. The age rating actually varies by country, but we have guidance on that in our certification page. What's allowed in Europe at 12 years old? This is where the markets come in important. Like, what's allowed in Europe in 12 years old is probably different than the US. We're much more conservative in some ways, and we're much less conservative in others. So you need to think about that a little bit and think about the markets that you're in. There are some countries which are very, very strict, and you need to be really careful about the types of content that you put in your apps and the age rating for that content. So again, consider that when you're building these apps. When in doubt, go with the higher age. The 12 plus seems to be the sweet spot age-wise, that if you're not sure, 12 plus is the one to pick. All right? But if you know that the app can be used by 3 plus or 7 plus, and you're not doing anything which would be bad for a toddler, you know, a 3-year-old to do, or bad for a 7-year-old to do, then you can pick those ages. There's also 16 plus content. 16 plus is mostly games. There's not a whole lot of apps that are 16 plus. They are out there. If you create an app with 16 plus content, you must use filters in there so that the first thing that comes up in the app is not 16 plus content. It has to be enabled by the user. And the reason for that is, if you don't do that, we will not highlight your app in the store. If your screenshots show 16 plus content, we will not highlight your app in the store, and we certainly wouldn't show it on TV. Right? So the 12 plus is okay, but anything which qualifies as 16 plus, and again, this is covered on the, you know, pages on MSDN, describes what these are. You need to make sure that those are filtered out if you want to get your app with maximum exposure. So when in doubt, up to the 16 plus, because that really is a separate kind of app. When in doubt, go with the 12 plus on there, unless you're sure that you're able to use it in younger ages. Also, things like ads, not going to be in a 3 plus app, right? Is a 3 plus, you know, a toddler is not an appropriate market for ads in your app. Although Nickelodeon and other places would probably disagree with from what I've seen on TV. And I just got fired for that comment, I'm sure. Provide tester notes. This is another important part of this. And so somebody came up to me before this test, before this session started, and said, "Hey, are you going to cover what's needed if you need to log into Facebook and you need to provide credentials for that?" Is that person still in here, or did they give up on me? Oh, yeah, they are. Good. Thank you for not giving up on me. I told them, no, I'm not going to cover that because I honestly don't know the answer for those specific ones where something like Facebook, you're not allowed to create a fake account and whatnot. But for any other service out there, like let's say you have your own server for your app, it's a game server, it's just an app server with content, and you need to have an account for that, you need to provide those login credentials to the testing team. And the place that you provide those is in these testing notes. Now, we've had some apps fail because instead of just saying, here's the account you use, they say, okay, first, and this, I'm not making this up, go to this URL, register for an account here, right? Associate it with this other account over here, then take those credentials and log into the app. The testing team's not going to do that. You need to get them from zero to into the app in as few steps as possible. It needs to be really idiot-proof. If you have a server that you want to test and set up for them to be able to do that certification, you need to set it up and provide them with those credentials. Yes? Yes. So the question is, if it's something like a SkyDrive account or other things that need that kind of stuff, would you create a generic SkyDrive account? And the answer would be like, I haven't checked our terms of service for SkyDrive. Assuming that's allowed, then yes, that's what I would do in that case. We can't assume that the testers have access to personal Facebook accounts or Twitter accounts or any of that kind of stuff on the testing machine. Now, this is an area, you know, that we're continuing to evolve here. Like, you know, the question of, well, what do you do when they must have a Facebook account that they can log into? And again, there's an answer to that I just don't happen to have right now. But we are continuing to evolve that to make sure that we have a good story for that and good process for that going forward. But you can always email me for the right answer on that, because I have to ask the store team. You know, send me an email, pete.brown@microsoft.com, and I'll get you an answer for that. Okay? And I do actually answer my email. All right. If the app relies on external hardware, you need to note that. So there are some apps that might rely on a specific type of printer or a specific type of device. You know, for example, I built an app that I use to remote control a robot. Any of you here .NET Micro Framework fans, like Gadgeteer, stuff like that? Cool, some folks in the back. So I built a little app that I use that uses Wi-Fi to control the robot. Now, if you don't have that robot, this app is not doing a whole lot of anything useful for you. So in the testing notes, I have to describe that this is what the app does, and here, you know, here's how it does it, like very briefly, that it requires this kind of a robot, and it goes through and even if you don't have the robot, here's how you can simulate certain things on the app. Like, here's how you can move from page to page. They're not going to go and buy the robot and test it. They're actually going to take it a bit on faith that it works with these devices, as long as they can navigate through the app in a meaningful way, and as long as if that device is not present, the app does not crash or do something ridiculous. Okay. Support all architectures I mentioned earlier, especially why you want to do that. All right, and let's quickly submit to the store here. Let me go back to that. So if I go back over here, those are my results. Here's that TechEd app. If I go in here and edit this, it's a very short demo if the Wi-Fi, oh, there we go, okay. So I've already reserved the app name. You see there are several steps here where those are grayed out. Like, I can't upload the app packages yet because I haven't done the other things that we have discussed. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to set the selling details. I'm going to set the price, right? So notice on the right it says free trial period and it's grayed out. That's because the app is currently free. So if I say that the app is going to be $1.49, and these are all the different pricing tiers that are available to you, I'm going to say it's $1.49, then inside here on the right side I can pick a trial period, 1 day, 7 days, 15 days, or 30 days. And this is really just a works for that amount of time and then stops working. Again, it's the most basic thing. So I'm going to say I'm going to have a 7 day trial. 1 day trials are not particularly friendly. So in general, unless your app really is something that using it for more than a day would significantly hurt the ability for a person to make any money on that, then I wouldn't pick 1 day on that. The market's here. And helpfully, it also shows you what the price that you picked converts to in each of those different markets. You know, I can pick each and every one of these, or I can pick just specific ones, or I can just select all. Right? I can't upload and put stuff in the store unless I've selected some markets. Incidentally, you might ask, well, how do I delete an app from the store? Right? You can't actually delete an app from the store. What you do is you resubmit but select zero markets. Right? So that's the way that we do that right now. I can pick a release date. If I want it in the store as immediately, as soon as possible, then I can just leave it at the default here where it'll publish in the store as soon as my app passes certification. Or I can say no sooner than a certain date. This is not a guarantee that the app will be published on that date. It's a guarantee that we won't publish it before that date. But certification, you know, if you've only given them a few days, certification could take a week. Right? If your app is particularly complex or it's a very busy time of year or something like that, it could potentially take up to a week for that. And if your date has already passed, it just means we'll publish it when the app is complete. Now I'm going to pick a category here. I'm going to say, let's say music and video. Not that this is a music and video app. Actually, I'm going to be legit and put it under sports since that is what it is. There is no subcategory for sports. Some of the other ones, like music and video, have the subcategories music and video, and games, I believe, have some different subcategories as well.
Can you do a manual submission? I mean, not automatic publishing, but you want to publish it after?
No, so the question is, can you do a manual submission, like flip the switch on a certain date? And the answer is no. Like, you need to, because of the way the process works, it's going to, like, you don't touch the app in that time in the middle, and you have no access to flip switches or do anything until it's back and published in the store. So it's really the store goes through, does their certification, it goes in this separate area, and then the switch is automatically flipped either immediately or after this other date. There's no manual intervention into that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, publish no sooner than that date. So again, I think you would have to resubmit it at that point and have it go through certification again.
I'm asking these questions because I had a lot of these issues with phone apps and, especially a kill switch. I hear there is a kill switch now, too, where you can just say, stop certification.
So the questions, I'm repeating the questions for the folks that watch the video. Is there a kill switch so that you can cancel the certification process? Is there ability to, you know, halfway through the certification process, decide that, I actually want to publish it right now? There's nothing automatic or available for any of those things. Certainly for certain apps, we've been able to, you know, I'm on part of the team that helps manage a relationship with some of the large customers there, being able to go in and go to the store and say, oh, hold on a second, something screwed up, stop this. I mean, sometimes we have that kind of flexibility, but it's all out of band, and it's not something that we encourage, and certainly isn't something that scales. In general, the way that you stop any of these things is by resubmitting with the settings that you want. And now, if your window is really close in time, then that's not going to help you a whole lot. But a lot of times, you get it in the store and then submit another version immediately that has the other changes that you're interested in. Okay. And this, again, these are part of those things that we're reevaluating all the time, right? So at least right now, that's the way those go. DirectX feature levels required, minimum system RAM. You can specify these. So I would encourage you, unless your app really needs to have any of these changes in there, I'd encourage you just to say available to all systems. Most of these are really about games. And then finally, the bottom one, accessibility. Don't check this option unless your app really has tested all the accessibility stuff. So that means, you know, supports screen readers, supports high contrast, supports all those things. I'm going to go into services here really quickly. This is where, if you want to use notification services or anything like that, you can set that up here, but we're not doing that here. That's all something that is done externally. Age rating and rating certificates, something I covered in here. This is where, again, you can see our information about which age ratings are appropriate. I'm going to say 7+ for this sports app. It could be 7+, could be 12+. Chances are a 3-year-old isn't going to be particularly interested in it, so I'm not even going to risk having it down at the 3+ level. I know that there's no foul language in there or anything like that, so I'm going to put it 7+. Now, the adults-only stuff, before you suddenly think, wow, I've hit the cash cow, I start selling porn apps, we don't allow those in the store. The adults-only stuff is really for just specific types of games, and I would encourage you not to go that route. Unless that really is, you know, you're creating the next Grand Theft Auto type app out there, and it's, you know that that's really necessary, because it does limit your market significantly by having these 18+ in there. If you're submitting games, you have additional things you need to submit for countries. These are all the different certifications for the game rating levels. If you're not submitting a game, you don't have to worry about those certificates. I'll save this. Cryptography, very important. If your app is using SSL or anything like that, you need to say that your app here has cryptography in it. If your app has cryptography, there are certain markets you are not allowed to submit it to, because we don't allow export of cryptographic technology to those. So I'm going to say, does it use cryptography? No. And then I'm going to get the extra box here. You know what's serious when you say no, and then you get the extra check off saying, are you really sure no? Right? So this one is, I am really sure no. This app is widely distributable because it does not include any cryptography information or any APIs. Now I can upload the app packages. So this is where I can go over to that folder and upload those. So I could upload them directly through Visual Studio if I wanted to, but I can also just drag and drop them in here. So if I go over to app packages and do this AppX upload, I can drag and drop it in here. Then it's going to upload it to the store.
Is that a zip file?
It's essentially like a zip file type thing, right? All right, so it's uploading to the store. Here we go, almost. You can tell everybody you watched a progress bar during my session. All right, almost. There we go. Okay, so now it's uploaded in there. It supports all of the different architectures. If I had the three different AppX uploads, one for each architecture, I would just put them all three in there, and they would all be part of the same app. I've been asked before, do I need to submit three different apps, one for each architecture? The answer is no. You just upload all three packages here as part of the same app, and we keep them associated, and we have the user will download the one that's appropriate for them automatically. Like, we pick the one that's correct for their particular machine. So now I save this. Okay. Now I can go in and have that description. had mentioned. So all the information you've ever wanted about a bunch of fictional sports teams. Now, you're going to add something a little bit more descriptive here. You're going to describe what the app does, that it can show those different scores, it can show their schedules, all that stuff. Individual features here, you might bulletize those, so very nice. And then this is where you're going to add your screenshots. The first screenshot is the most important screenshot. This is the one where that first screenshot that you see when you go in and look at that app's listing, it's the first screenshot in this list. So make sure that the screenshots you provide the best one first. Submit a whole bunch, not duplicate and not like crappy stuff, but show your app in action. Show it doing something useful. Show it doing something meaningful. Things like login pages and settings pages and splash screens. I've seen lots of apps where the first shot of the app is its splash screen. I don't care about your splash screen. As a developer, you may be pretty proud of that awesome splash screen. As an end user, I don't care. I don't want to see your splash screen. Show me the other stuff that your app does. So that's where you can add that. Notes, these are not the tester notes. These are the notes for this particular release that when users go to that second tab inside the store and they want to see what the latest release information is going to be, this is where you're going to include that, as well as keywords for searching, any recommended hardware on there, additional license terms if you have them, and then the promotional images. And the promotional images are what I talked about earlier, which are the ones that we're going to use to highlight your app in the store. They're all optional, but make sure you add those in there. And then finally, the privacy policy, a link to that privacy policy, as well as a link to your website and your support information. Yes, you do need to support your app. All right? And I'm running a little late here, so let's see. No, I'm just about done. I'm not actually going to flip the switch here and submit this app. I've gone just about all the way. The next tab, once I complete this one, the next page is just the tester notes that I had mentioned where you can go in and submit the tester notes and then finally submit the app to the store. The process of uploading doesn't submit the app. Filling out all the rest of the information then lets you submit and publish that app. So if it failed, let's say a failed certification, it happens to people from time to time, review the materials that are provided by that certification team and understand that those materials are really the only things that you're going to get. Like, you can't contact an individual certification tester because these are just lots and lots of people working on certifying apps all the time. They have, standard environments, but they're not like support personnel. They're just testing the app and you're letting you know if it passed or failed. Now, we've gotten a lot better about the information we provide. We'll provide crash dumps if available, if it crashed. We'll also let you know in as much detail as we can, like where the app crashed and kind of what it did. But still, the onus is on you to figure out like what's wrong with your app. And one of the main things you need to do is make sure you've tested all three architectures of your app, because maybe you've only been testing 64-bit but didn't realize the ARM version is failing on a particular thing. So those are definitely worth testing. Read each policy in depth on the certification requirements site, because they're going to say you failed policy 1.1, right? Something like that. Must be a useful app, right? Or some, or they're going to say that it crashes on coming back from suspend on the resume, or it isn't working correctly with any of the other features, or you're using APIs that you shouldn't use, or anything like that. We'll provide that information to you. Yes. So the question is, if you have like six things wrong with your app, are they going to list all six for you, or are you going to get like one at a time, like resubmit and get the next one, resubmit and get the next one? It depends upon the nature of the error. Like you said, if it's a crash, they can't test beyond that. Usually they're going to tell you if it failed more than a couple policies. Will they do six? I'm not sure, but I've seen some with like two and three, right? I'm not sure at what point the testing team goes, you know what, this app has definitely failed. I'm not going any further. The certification policies are on that bit.ly URL at the bottom. Let's get this. And if it didn't work, right, you want to escalate it, then go to official Windows Store support, which is at aka.ms/store support. And that is the official place for you to get support on apps. Escalating through your local developer evangelist and stuff like that typically is not a route that's going to work. You want to go through this and open up a ticket. So let's talk very briefly about promoting your app. Make sure you announce it to the whole world. But I do recommend you let it shake out for just a little bit before you announce it to the whole world. So let some people download it, make sure you don't have some bug that you missed, and then start thinking about promotion for that app. Link it with your website. If you go to bit.ly/linkWin8app, there's information there on how to take it, make your website have some metadata in there so that it'll say, hey, there's an app available that's the equivalent for this. You can also link to your app on your website. I very highly encourage you to do this. You can say it's available in the Windows Store and use any one of these logos, you know, the green screens that are on the individual tablet and notebook images. You can go and just replace that with an image of your app and put that on your website and have it linked directly to the URL for your app. And again, the URI format for linking to your app in the Windows Store. So if they're on Windows 8 and you want it to directly link to their app on the Windows Store, you can use that MS Windows Store :PDP and then that long, that what's called a PFN that you can see on your store page. Not your store listing, but your store edit page. Keep it updated. We don't like apps that go stale. So, you know, ideally you're releasing additional content over time. Certainly if there are any bugs, we want to make sure that you keep fixing those. If you're using in-app purchases, keep that catalog fresh. You know, keep the app moving. You know, apps that are just dumped out there and then don't have any lifetime beyond that eventually find themselves over on the right of the Windows Store because users are not downloading them and aren't necessarily happy with them. Keep the content fresh, I just mentioned. Fix all those reported bugs. I know I've said this a couple times now, but it's really important. You know, keep an eye on the store. If you're seeing bugs reported in one-star reviews, make sure you fix those because we do look at that as well, and we certainly are not going to highlight an app that has any bugs that are outstanding that you haven't been responsive to. And keep an eye on your ratings in all the markets. So if you submit to, 100 different markets, keep your eye on the different ratings there for all of those markets. So this is my book. I'm going to pimp it to you guys. So please, if you're interested in developing Windows Store apps, they have this in the bookstore here now. And they have me doing a book signing tomorrow at like 12:30. So if you want me to deface your copy of the book, I'm happy to do that. The certification requirements I'd mentioned are on the Win8 app cert page. So definitely check those out because these are what you're being held to when you submit your app to the store. And also, there's the Windows UX checklist, and I'll go more into user experience and quality and stuff in my talk tomorrow morning. But you want to definitely check out that, although my link there is a little fouled up, I see, when they edited this. There's obviously not the second HTTP and second bit.ly in there. But anyway, so that's Win UX checklist is what you want to use there. Then I have a bunch of other content. So these are the standard slides, and I'm going to be a terrible person and just click through them. Channel 9, all these sessions are going to be available on Channel 9 later. And, wow, we love our animation. I'd like to let you guys just watch that all day. Complete your evaluation on ComNet here. If you liked the session, please go and complete your evaluation. And if you didn't like the session, it's up to you whether or not you want to complete the evaluation. So, all right. And I'll be around here for a little bit. I've only got 1 minute left, and I don't want to make the next person late. I don't know if there's a session after this, but I'll hang around here in the hallway after this. So, thank you.